You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The resort community of Bayview is nestled on the shore of Lake Michigan. It is picturesque and it is divided. Bayview requires that to own a home there, you must be a practicing Christian and a pastor or church leader must verify you're a churchgoer. That rule has resulted in a lawsuit that argues it's discriminatory and violates the First Amendment, the Federal Fair Housing Act, and Michigan's Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act. We're going to hear from both sides today. We start with Sarah Prescott, the attorney who filed the lawsuit against the Bayview Association of the United Methodist Church. Sarah, welcome.
So good to be here.
So you represent the Bayview Chautauqua Inclusiveness Group in this suit. What is happening that this suit is trying to tackle?
It's a bit of a long story. The story starts in 1942 when, unfortunately, this community decided to bring in racial and religious restrictions in who could live in their community. So in the early 1940s, this community said you had to be white and you had to be Christian in order to own a home there. And that's how it went for a period of apparently several years, a little bit more than a decade. It looks like in the late 50s, they eliminated the racial component, but the religious requirement stayed. And it actually evolved over time. Interestingly enough, there was a period where there was a Catholic quota. So we have learned that there were people who actually negotiated to buy a home in this community, and they were told, you know, I'm sorry, we're all full up on our Catholics, and so you're not going to be able to go through with that. So they had a Catholic quota for a period. That apparently has gone by the wayside around the mid-1980s. But what we are left with here today is that this community has a written rule right on the face of its bylaws and procedures that you have to be a practicing Christian with a note from a pastor or a minister or a priest attesting to your religiosity in order to become a homeowner.
Give us a few examples, if you would, of people that you've spoken to, come to know, who feel they've been discriminated against. I guess I'm wondering, what does this Christian litmus test look like and feel like for these people?
Yeah, I mean, so the community has what I'm going to give them all the credit that they're due. They have a wonderful Chautauqua program, which is has a lot of different components, charitable components, to be sure, educational components. And those are largely open to the surrounding community. This is a community very near Petoskey. And so there are people over time who have become involved in this community and participated in these wonderful educational programs.
They go back to the 19th century, Chautauqua movement. Yeah.
Yes, and they're all over the country, New York, Colorado. And so these folks have had their children become involved and they've become interested, for example, in becoming homeowners in this community, but they aren't practicing Christians. And so while they may be welcome to come, may even be welcome to rent a home for a period, they cannot become homeowners in this community. So that's some of the folks who are affected. There are people in the group that I represent who have tried to buy or looking to buy and have just simply been told that they cannot. There's also a really interesting effect of this kind of rule, which I've found has been quite noted by people in the community. It's that if you are married to a spouse who is not a practicing Christian and you happen to pass away, your spouse cannot inherit the property. If you are the last holder of your marriage, your spouse passes away, now you want to pass down to your children or your grandchildren, you may be able to pass to child A, who is a practicing Christian, but child B cannot partially inherit the home. And so some of the folks that I represent have actually had to get rid of their homes. They're reaching later stages of life. They're trying to do their estate planning, and they're realizing, you know, if I die and this property is in my hands, they're going to do a fire sale and my children aren't going to inherit this property, so we're going to sell. I also represent people who are current owners, but they cannot pass to their wives and husbands and children and whatnot.
So in your view, how does this policy, this Christian litmus test, violate the law? Which laws?
Okay. So there's two major claims in our suit. The first one is sort of the over-the-plate, obvious First Amendment problem here. The First Amendment obviously says the government can't become too entangled or enmeshed in religion. It can't sponsor state religion. It can't prefer one religion over another. And this community has been given by the state of Michigan all kinds of powers that a state usually reserves for itself. So, for example, the private leadership of this community is entitled to pass rules and enforce them on anybody who's in the community, up to and including imposing fines and taking people to jail with their own privately deputized individual who has the power of a sheriff's deputy. So you can imagine a synagogue or a mosque or a church making up a rule that you wouldn't work on their holy day and enforcing that and taking you in for a fine if you work in your home or pass through the streets working. And those are the kinds of rules that are permitted by state law. They've been devolved down to this community at Bayview. And that's just one example. They can assess taxes. They control the streets and the sewers and the docks. They are the state for many purposes based on state law. And at the same time, they have this very Christian identity and they promulgate the Christian faith. And so the first claim of our suit is that you can't have both. Obviously, you can go be a church and people can go pray in their homes and in their churches and out in the community. Nobody says differently. But when the state is so entangled and enmeshed and you are promulgating one religion and preferring a religion, that's against the First Amendment. So that's the first claim of our suit. The other claim of our suit is to do with federal and state anti-discrimination laws. So one of the questions you see in a lot of dialogue about this case that's been spawned since we filed it is, well, why can't these folks – this is private property, isn't it? Why can't they do what they want to do on their private property? And basically the answer is it's the same answer as why Rosa Parks could sit where she wanted on the bus. It's the same answer as to why the lunch counter was desegregated. It's the same answer why we don't have black and white drinking fountains anymore. A lot of those places and entities that were involved in the civil rights movement have been private properties and private businesses. We as a country have said that if you are going to be in the business of buying and selling homes, for example, and lunch and bus rides, you have to follow a certain set of rules that do not allow for discrimination based on race, religion, gender, and whatnot. So we are alleging that Bayview violates federal and state anti-discrimination laws as well.
How does a law called the Summer Resort and Assembly Associations Act fit into the arguments in your lawsuit?
Yeah, it's a really interesting act. It's not something that many people have probably dug into in the past.
I guarantee that.
True. It's an 1889 act. And here's what I think it was trying to do. I think in 1889, what happened is the state said, different communities, you're going to be blessed under this act. You're going to become a summer resort, and we're going to create you out from the body of the state. And we're going to give you all the powers that go along with running a community.
So is that how Bayview got these powers?
Exactly. And so what I think was going on is that in 1889, a place like Petoskey, Michigan was way off the beaten track. And so you didn't necessarily have easy access to the state's actual sheriff or the state's taxing authorities. So the state said, you go ahead and run your own community. We're letting you do that. Here's all the things you're going to be empowered to do. And Bayview is one of these communities that has all this special state power. And at the same time, they're trying to be a overtly Christian community at the same time.
So we can take this and say that Bayview is not just a Christian club. It's not a church.
Right. I mean, that is really important to understand. There are really heartfelt religious feelings on both sides of this lawsuit. I mean, this is not an attack or a charge against Christian clubs, Christian organizations, Christian practice, Christian lifestyle, because I'm representing some lifelong dedicated Christians who happen to believe that engagement is really valuable and important and that they're, you know, called to engage with non-believers as part of their practice of the religion. So this is not a suit that suggests that people shouldn't be allowed to practice their religion in their own way, merely that they can't discriminate in violation of state and federal law, and that they can't be the government and a practicing religion.
And when Bayview residents say, but wait, Bayview was founded as a Chautauqua in the 19th century Methodist campground that people came to for spiritual reawakening, that it was founded for a religious purpose, what do you say to that?
If you go back to the documents of its founding, what they say is that you had to be a person of good moral character in order to participate. They may have believed, like I just described some of my clients, that engagement with people who were open-minded but generally good people was a way to proselytize and it was a way to reach people. They may have believed that there was a division between church and state. They may have believed that you know, good moral character was really code for Christian. I don't know exactly, you know, where they were with it. But what I do know is that the requirement that in order to own in this community, you had to be Christian came into being in the 1940s, long after this entity was created. Interesting point, too, is that my clients who are, you know, in their 70s and 80s remember running around as kids with Jewish friends, right? So they had other folks living in this community and owning in this community before those rules came into place. And so this concept that, well, we've always been this way and we, you know, this is our heritage and this is important to us. That's true for the folks who sort of, you know, had their awakening in their, you know, childhood and then later adulthood after the 1940s. But for the older folks, they remember a time when this was not part of Bayview.
So you filed the suit in federal court last July. What's happened since then? Where do things stand?
In the interim, we have worked hard to communicate to Bayview that we have no wish to force this, that we believe that it would be better for Bayview to negotiate a resolution, because when you negotiate, you get to work it out between you rather than have the judge issue a ruling that maybe neither side exactly would have framed that way. And we tried to sit down with Bayview in a mediation, and to their credit, they came to the table to discuss and at least entertain a resolution, and it just didn't go anywhere. So the next steps in the suit will be asking the court to rule outright that based on the facts that nobody is disputing and that we all know are in place, we simply have a violation of the Constitution and state and federal anti-discrimination laws, so that what you get out of that process is a declaratory judgment and an injunction against continuing to enforce those rules.
Attorney Sarah Prescott, who is representing the Bayview Chautauqua Inclusiveness Group in this federal lawsuit, thank you so much for speaking with us.
So good to be here. Thank you so much.
Let's turn now to Dick Crossland. He's a longtime resident of Bayview, and he's seeking to preserve the membership rules. Dick, welcome, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Good to talk with you, Cindy.
So I want to make sure that I'm very clear in my understanding of the Bayview bylaws. So you must be a practicing Christian and also have a note or letter affirming that fact from a pastor or a minister or a priest in order to buy or inherit a home in Bayview?
Yeah, the bylaws say that if you want to become a member and you need to be a member to own a cottage there, you do need to get a letter from a minister or pastor of a church that you attend.
And is it true when Bayview was first founded, the requirement for a prospective owner, a homeowner, was that you needed to be over 21 and of good moral character?
That was what was written. It was understood at the time when Bayview was founded, it was a Methodist church camp, and it was implicit that you were going to be a Christian, not necessarily a Methodist. They made it very clear that they accepted other denominations, but it was implicit that this was intended to be a organization for Christians.
So, Dick, how do you respond to those who believe that the religious restriction in Bayview's bylaws clearly violate constitutional rights, religious rights, civil rights?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, so I would refrain from, you know, citing the legal arguments. What I would say is that every single person who has taken up the stance and campaigned for an elimination of the Christian requirements, joined Bayview, which is a voluntary organization, not only knowing that those were the requirements, but knowing that those were very important requirements. During the interview process, it's stressed that those who are joining our community should be comfortable in upholding our bylaws and supporting our mission. Our mission statement for decades has included the phrase that we're to be a community which provides a Christian perspective in a changing world.
And what of the people whose parents or grandparents owned a home in Bayview, but the next generation can't inherit because, let's say, the spouse is Jewish?
They knew that when they joined, to start out with. I've had a number of people tell me that they are pleased that the cottage inheritance depends upon being a practicing Christian, because many families have seen children grow up, and I know it's not uncommon when you're young in college, first married, to kind of drift away from the faith, and later on when you have kids and settle down a little bit, maybe you come back. And they said that was an incentive for them, because they would tell their children, listen, if you want to inherit the cottage, you need to start becoming involved in a church. And they liked that as a help in their family to bring what were maybe cultural Christians back to more practicing Christians.
Just to be clear, Bayview is not a club or not a church, correct?
Well, again, those are perhaps legal definitions.
But it's certainly not it's not a church.
Well, you know, again, it may very well not be, but I wouldn't want to characterize it in terms that could be used in a legal sense later on.
Well, when we think of the history of racially and religiously restrictive covenants in this country, it goes back to those early years of the 20th century, and it was created to keep white Protestant neighborhoods white and Protestant and to keep property prices from going down. And we know in 1948, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the racially restrictive covenants were not enforceable. Why should religious restrictive covenants be interpreted differently?
There is an exception to that, and again, this gets into a legal area that I'm not competent to argue, but the bottom line is Bayview believes it does have a religious exemption to those.
What is the best case scenario in your mind to resolving this lawsuit?
I think the best case is to resolve it internally. We've had a few attempts. We've been unsuccessful in doing that. I think that there are compromises that could be made. I've, as someone who's been very strong and wanting to keep the Christian requirement, have suggested that there might be a way to modify the bylaws so that we could accommodate those families that have had a cottage for generations and that for one reason or another today it can't be inherited, that we could maybe relax the rules to accommodate those special cases without throwing it completely open, but so far that's not been something that the other side is willing to entertain.
Dick, what do you think the people who are involved in this lawsuit don't understand? What do you think they're missing?
Well, I think they're missing, quite frankly, what the consequences of this lawsuit could be. The lawsuit is asking for Bayview to be declared a quasi-governmental entity. If that were to happen, we would not only change the membership requirement, but we would lose completely our religious program. Because as a quasi-governmental agency, we could not support any religion, let alone Christianity. So the religious program area, which a lot of us consider to be the strongest and most important of the four program areas, would completely be gone. And I think that is, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I think there should be ways for us to come together without inviting a court to make a decision that perhaps no one would like in the very end.
Dick Crossland is a longtime Bayview resident, and his view is that he's seeking to preserve the membership rules of Bayview. Dick, thank you so much for speaking with us.
You're welcome. Thank you, Cindy.